From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Andrea Seabrook.
And I'm Michelle Norris. This month, 2 years after Hurricane Katrina, we're telling you stories about people, about survival, and, well, something short of that. The Annals of Emergency Medicine recently published a study of FEMA parks set up after Katrina, and the findings about mental health are disturbing. Suicide attempts are roughly 79 times higher than average for the region. Depression, 7 times the national average. Reporter Elise Spiegel visited one of the parks in the study, a small FEMA park called Scenic Trails, buried deep in the Mississippi forest, 30 minutes from the closest town. That's where 100 families have lived for close to 2 years.
I met Billy Snow the morning I arrived, a large man sitting on his trailer porch in a heavy metal wheelchair. He was surrounded on all sides by the bright green webbing he uses to make fishing nets.
These are what you call a drop net. You drop the net down, people crab with it. I've been doing this since my daddy died in 75.
When you first came here, how long did you think you would stay?
I figured about maybe 5 or 6 months. I figured, me knowing myself, I'd figure a way to get out of the situation. I won't give up.
Snow has a small contract to sell the nets to stores. Though he works 14 hours a day, he says he's only made $2,000 in the last 3 months. Still, it's at least steady work. And his wife, Linda, says their neighbors have begun to resent their good fortune.
And they think we are rich. He's not rich. I mean, we're living barely, you know. Like the others, we want to get out of here badly.
But getting out of Scenic Trails is no easy matter. While less than $1,000 a month may make you a king inside the park, it doesn't go far in the outside world.
We looked at an apartment the other day. $750 a month. Plus, you had to pay a $500 deposit. I can't afford that. I'm looking 2 years for this business before I even see any daylight out of it.
I don't care if I have to live in a box. I'm not staying here 2 years. Well, you can go nuts out here.
Scenic Trails is isolated. An old commercial campground chosen by FEMA because it already had trailer hookups. The site in southern Mississippi is 30 minutes by car from the closest town. The kind of place where cell phones falter. Even Billy Snow, who apparently used to enjoy the outdoors, says the isolation of the park has worn him down.
I used to laugh a lot, you know, joke around, but I really don't have nothing to laugh about living in a place like this.
One issue for Snow is his trailer. Since losing his leg in a work accident years ago, Snow has been forced to use a wheelchair, but it's too big to fit in his trailer.
When I want to go inside, I got to leave my wheelchair on the porch, and I got to crawl inside. You know, I think no man should have to crawl around.
But really, being forced to crawl through his own home is the least of Snow's problems. You see, over the last 2 years, Scenic Trails has been overwhelmed by crime so intense that the sheriff's office is forced to answer calls 6 to 10 times a week. There's meth addiction, coke addiction, and almost everyone at the camp has been burglarized at least once. Even trailer power cords are stolen and stripped for copper. Which is why, Linda Snow says, she finds it so hard to sleep through the night.
I can't sleep. I have to listen if anybody comes close to the trailer or to the truck. Somebody might break in or hurt the dog in there.
What do you mean, hurt the dog?
They got somebody feeding antifreeze to pets around here.
They've been feeding antifreeze to the pets?
Yeah.
Some crazy people around here. They're going after animals.
I actually heard this charge from a number of people.
Somebody was cruel enough to murder my dog.
This is Cynthia Bobbinger, a small woman with a wandering eye, who, after introducing herself, calmly explained that the family dog had been killed 3 days before.
They gave him antifreeze and killed him. I buried him in my yard up there. Got him buried up there with the Blue Cross.
Another resident complained that her cat had come home maimed, a razor cut across his leg. And then there was their neighbor, Mr. Smith.
My dog got sliced with a knife or something. People back there killing people's dogs for no reason.
No one seemed to have a theory about who was responsible, why. That was just the way things went at the camp nowadays. People were angry and frustrated, and so they acted out on the animals, on each other, on themselves. Shortly after talking to the Snows, I met a man named Tim Sepek walking the road between some trailers. He was tall, capable-looking. I asked if we could talk, and he agreed. So I started with what I thought was a casual question.
What is it like to live around here?
Honestly,
And a day go by, I don't think about, like, offing myself, because it ain't worth living out here.
For real?
For real. It sucks out here.
Before Katrina, CPEC built forklifts. But after FEMA moved him out to scenic trails, his car broke down and left him without transportation. This meant he had nothing to do all day but sit in his trailer, visit the mailroom, and think about killing himself. Had you ever thought about that before?
No.
And when you think about that, what do you think about?
Ways to do it. I know plenty of ways. It's just the least painful one, probably.
Do you have a family?
Yeah. I have a child.
A couple seconds later, CPEC walked away, and I wandered down the lane, past a group of children playing, to another trailer, where a woman named Stephanie Sigger sat at a picnic table with her daughter on her lap. I introduced myself, sat down, and roughly 3 minutes later, found myself in the exact same conversation.
If it wasn't a sin, I would have done committed suicide a long time ago. I know it's a bad thing to say because I'm a parent. But I can't live like this no more.
Sigger lives in a small trailer with her husband and 4 and 6-year-old daughters. She tells me that a couple months ago, she became so unhappy with her life in scenic trails that she covered the windows of her trailer in tinfoil and refused to leave her bedroom for close to 2 weeks. It was her daughters, she says, who brought her back.
They've already had so much taken away from them, you know, and they don't need to see the parent break down like that. So I went to the doctor and he put me on some antidepressants.
And did they help? Sigger is careful to point out that it's not that her family isn't trying. Her husband has a job, a good job in New Orleans.
He has to drive almost an hour and a half to go to work every day, you know, and he does side work constantly. We never see him. But it's like you can never get on top of anything.
Stephanie herself got a job as soon as she got to the camp, but between paying for gas and childcare, she ended up making less than what she spent, and so Stephanie quit.
And the only reason I went to work was to help get my family out of here, but I couldn't even do that, you know, so now I'm a stay-at-home mom, and we're trying to get out of here.
2 streets down, I knock on a new trailer door, thinking, incorrectly, that it belonged to someone I'd met. Behind the screen there was a woman, thin and attractive, with dyed red hair. So I asked if she wanted to talk about how Katrina had affected her. And by the time her door slammed shut and she walked down the trailer steps, she was already crying.
This is Hurricane Katrina every day. See us? We're dying in here. We're dying in here.
This devastated woman, Kim Panichero, apparently ran a preschool out of her home and drove a school bus before Katrina. But it is frankly hard to conjure that image of her now, to see a competent professional beneath a collection of ticks and outbursts. Her conversation runs in circles, then veers in unpredictable directions, but much of it is focused on the early days after the storm. Stories of surviving with her young son for days without food. Stories so haunting to Panichero that she whispers them, eyes wide, as if talking to herself.
3 weeks after the storm, they came. There's a ditch on highway, on 603. And we were bathing in that ditch. We bathed in that ditch like African women. We took our kids, we took our clothes. The men were there, too. Oh, God, Lord.
Like a lot of people at the camp, even before Katrina, Panichero's life had begun a decline. 2 years before the storm, her husband ran into trouble with the law, then died of a blood clot. Panichero lost her home, then Katrina totaled her rented apartment. But it wasn't until she got to scenic trails that she really began to fall apart. After moving in, she got involved in drugs, was arrested for crack. Things got worse and worse until one day, about 4 months ago, when she turned to her 11-year-old son and announced that she was leaving him to go kill herself.
I picked up the gun and said, I got to get out of here. If you need anything, go next door. And I got in the car and I left. I sat up in that little country, rode up right up the street for about an hour and a half. And, you know, look at the clouds and the cows. A couple of us right here, we lay in these people's pastures. And you know it's stupid because you know you're not going anywhere and you don't want to die. And you want to make it like that. And every day you just go, come on, God, stop, you know. Just come on, take me, quit. I can't handle this.
It was shortly after that incident that the state took her son away. She went into counseling but didn't regain custody of her child. She does, however, have a boyfriend, a man she met after Katrina, who's trying to convince her to leave Scenic Trails.
So he says leave. And I don't want to because I'm scared. I'm just, you know, I'm ready for life just to slow down. So I sit here where it's quiet, not going to lock the door up. Nobody can get to me.
She's so distraught, she don't know what to do.
This is Thomas Page, Penichero's boyfriend. Penichero and Page met immediately after the storm, and according to Page, moved temporarily to a town in central Mississippi called Rolling Fork. It was there, he says, that he really fell in love.
We were in Rolling Fork, and I saw the woman doing really good. She was just a total different person because she was away from everything. She was in a whole new place, and she was just doing great. She had anxiety attacks and stuff, and I knew that was from the storm.
Penichero convinced Page to move closer to her old town, so they moved to Scenic Trails, but it was a bad move. Mentally, Penichero just seemed to disintegrate.
It's been a long, hard road with her, and I'm trying to get her out of this area, but I don't know if that's going to be enough. I don't know what the hell to do. I'm getting cussed. I'm getting hit.
Is that thing on the side of your head, is that from her?
Yep. I'll let her take her anger out on me right now. She can hit me, and I'll stand there and take it. But it can only last so long.
If it weren't for Penichero, Page says, he'd be at work. He works on an oil rig. But he's taken 6 weeks off to convince her to move from this horrible place he feels is poisoning her. His fear, he tells me, is that if he doesn't move her, Penichero will deteriorate further and their relationship won't survive.
That's why I've got to get her out of this town, and I've got to get her out of this town this week because I have to get back to work. If I have to go back to work and get back on that boat, knowing things that I know and what's going on, I ain't going to be able to do it. I cannot do it. I love this woman. I know she's a good woman. I know she is. I saw her in a total different light when she was away from this town, and I know she's a good woman. And I want to try to help her. And I got to get back to work, and I don't want to drive off and leave her.
On my way out of Scenic Trails, a disheveled man came up to my car window and knocked. I had met the man earlier. In fact, his trailer was the first I had visited. At 10 in the morning, he had opened his door, clearly high on something, a tall pile of garbage visible on the floor behind him. Because I had met him before, I rolled down the window, and he reached into the car and passed me a box of apricots. He said he wanted to give these to me. He told me, "Take these to the outside world." I placed them on the seat beside my recording equipment and drove away.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Andrea Seabrook.
And I'm Michelle Norris. We now return to Elise Spiegel's story about mental health in FEMA trailer parks after Hurricane Katrina. In part two, Elise explores why the situation is still so desperate.
Amen. Let's get started.
Each Sunday at 9, traveling preacher Kimothy Lazan sets a large black boombox on the front table of the Scenic Trails Clubhouse and attempts to share God's love with the FEMA park residents. On the morning I visited, 8 people sat scattered over 4 rows, watching quietly as Lazan and his wife Toni clapped their hands to the inspirational CDs.
These are the days of Elijah.
Though the Lazans firmly believe that God has called them to help these people, they clearly have found the process difficult. They talked to me about the first Christmas after the storm, how together with their church they worked to buy presents for each of the traumatized families, but how in the months leading up to Christmas, every time they set foot in the park, this effort met with criticism.
That gets at the guard gate. You didn't get the right size, or you didn't get this that I'm sitting here. You say to yourself, be thankful for what you got.
Lazan's disenchantment is profound enough that when I tell him about my own experience, how in a single morning, 4 park residents told me they had seriously considered suicide, he only shook his head.
They'll say that. They play on your emotions. But a lot of times you got to be careful because they want something from you.
Lazan talks to me about his experience, how a couple months ago he was called by the park manager to help a resident threatening to kill himself.
Now, this is a man who's supposed to be wanting to commit suicide, and he got in a heated conversation with me. If he was committing suicide, you ain't going to get in a heated conversation with him, with a minister. I'm sorry, you're just not going to do it. And what had happened is, he was wanting something. He was wanting something. And most of it was pity.
As far as the Lazans are concerned, If you are searching for some explanation of why FEMA Park residents are struggling, you need look no farther than the nearest trailer.
The government's come in and gave the helping hand. People in the churches around and give the helping hand. Mm-hmm. What's the problem? The person. All the people that don't meet society standards in little camps now, and people are seeing it.
You actually hear this argument a fair amount when you travel around southern Mississippi. Many see the parks as bastions of crime, filled with people who refuse to help themselves. In fact, in Hancock County, where Scenic Trails is located, Scenic Trails is considered one of the least troubled parks.
Hancock 30 for dispatch, we're back to 8.
One day during my visit, Officer Eddie Smith of the Hancock County Sheriff's Department took me on a tour of the trailers in another Hancock FEMA park.
This one over here where this black car is, we have a lot of problems out. We had a domestic there the other night. Me and you could sit right there this afternoon. And they can go from fight to fight to fight to fight.
And this one you think is worse than Scenic Trails?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Still, not everyone is convinced that FEMA Park residents are exclusively to blame for their predicament. J.R. Welsh, a reporter for the Biloxi Sun-Herald, covers Hancock County and is in and out of the parks on a regular basis talking to people.
Most of them are working poor. You see them working at the retail stores or the hamburger joints.
In fact, Welsh doesn't even need to leave his office to see FEMA Park residents. He just has to look out his window.
I see them all day long up and down Highway 90. They walk where they go in their little, you know, work uniforms. Maybe they walk a mile, maybe they walk 5 miles. And at the end of an 8 or 10 or 12-hour shift, they walk back to that FEMA trailer. They're just basic, working, poor people who would love to get out of that park, but they can't.
And according to Welsh, there's a simple reason people can't leave: the cost of living.
A meal in a restaurant is beyond the means of a lot of these folks now. Looking at some figures the other day, the average rental for a house in Hancock County before the hurricane in the 2000 census was about $417. Now it may be from $8 to $9 to $1,000. Where do these people go? You're a prisoner there, basically.
The day after I talked to Welsh, I went to visit a Mississippi FEMA office and met with Cindy Gordon. She told me that every day, she and her FEMA coworkers methodically search apartment listings, contact real estate agents, all in an effort to locate what she calls fair market rent. That is, apartments that are affordable for someone on a minimum wage. But the day I visited, this is how many she had on offer.
As of right now, we don't show that anything in Hancock County is available under fair market rent.
Literally zero.
Right.
Gordon tells me in Hancock County alone, there are roughly 2,000 people housed in FEMA parks, and 61% of those people are employed. So do you feel like the working poor is essentially being warehoused in FEMA parks?
I wouldn't say warehoused. I would say we are assisting them in every way we can.
And Gordon feels strongly that FEMA should not be blamed for the poor mental health of park residents.
Katrina caused depression, not the FEMA parks.
But psychologist Becky Law sees something completely different. Law is the director of the Hancock County Community Mental Health Center, and she says, on the contrary, the parks play a central role in the desperation she sees in her clients.
Really, people need to be at a place where they feel safe and secure.
After all, Law says, without basic security, the trauma, in a sense, continues.
If right now they're in a place where they feel like they have no hopeful future, you know, they're still in a survival's mode. They're still living from day to day.
Unfortunately, according to local officials, affordable housing for Hancock is a distant dream. Home insurance along the coast has gone up 400%. Building costs have doubled. So creating cheap housing is almost impossible. David Yarborough, member of the Hancock County Board of Supervisors, tells me things are bad enough that he fields calls from people in his district all the time, former neighbors and acquaintances now living in the parks who beg him for help.
I've had several call me scared to death, call me to actually try to get them out of the park, but, I mean, there was really nothing I could do. They're kind of trapped right now.
This problem of people being trapped in FEMA parks indefinitely is not new. It often takes years to move people out of supposedly temporary parks after a major disaster. What is new is the scale. Around 35,000 people remain in FEMA trailer parks, and several housing experts told me that unless the federal government uses vouchers to move people out to less expensive areas of the country, it'll likely be another 3 or 4 years before most Katrina evacuees can get out, which is a long time for residents like Kim Penichero, the desperate woman who lost custody of her son after she attempted suicide.
This is how I look at it. Everybody does go on with life, you know what? But we are down here, and we are not okay. And I know y'all have other news, but peek in every once in a while. Just peek in.
Elise Spiegel, NPR News.